Could you repeat that?
Did you get the right button there, Paul?
We'll all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Megan.
From Hillsborough Gearing, Perla Iodonovan.
Here.
Chris Bober. Paul Plater.
Present.
Heidi Welch.
Here.
Jess Morris.
Here.
From Washington, Linda Masmano.
Here.
Danielle Moore.
Here.
Kathy Atkins.
Here.
Camille Mulliner. Erin Mills.
Here.
From Windsor, Cynthia Stokes.
Here.
Lori Hunt.
Here.
Dave Robbins.
Here.
Okay. Correspondence, I do not have any. So we will commence with our interview with Dr. Coffin. Welcome.
Good evening.
Okay. We're going to start out with Cindy has a question.
Welcome. In the grand scheme of operations, where does professional development fit as a budgeted item? How do you go about implementing a professional development program that meets the needs of all staff and faculty in changing financial times? How do you support your own personal and professional development?
Okay. Well, first of all, professional development is an essential component to school improvement and ensuring that staff have the tools and resources that they need in order to stay current and implement the curriculum. So it is a foundational component. We are fortunate to have a wide range of grants that help support professional development here in SIU 34. They are not the only financial resources that we need in order to support financial development or professional development in the SAU and across the SAU, but we do the lion's share of them. The Title II grants are earmarked almost exclusively for professional development purposes and teacher retention, and so that is a huge resource. We also are blessed with Title IV funds, which can be transferred into Title II and used for professional development. We have, as you are all very much aware, the unique funding from Duncan Jenkins, which also is a huge resource here in the district. As part of the collective bargaining agreement with both of the unions, the district does support the professional development of the staff, both the teachers and the support staff. And that's a budgeted item, and it's important to have that there. So there is a place where the district needs to be able to invest in that, and that's an essential component of it. The second part of the question was asking about my own professional development. So professional development is an ongoing process. You can't stop learning what it is that you're working on and working through and working with folks. And so just like with any other staff member in the district, it's important to have professional goals that are set and have professional development opportunities that are tailored towards those goals. And so they're in alignment with what the work is that is being done in order to ensure that staff have what they need. It is their voice is essential in that whole process. So when the professional development committee meets and works to give a professional development plan that kind of governs the process of how professional development works in the district, it is really important that we make sure that we have voices that are representative of all of the staff groups that are impacted by that plan. So for me personally, it's setting goals and looking for opportunities that will help ensure that I am able to continue to stay current in all of the topics that are going to help me do the work that I do.
Thank you.
Okay. Jess?
Yes, I was just finishing writing. Okay. Please provide an example of something innovative that was implemented under your leadership. How did you gain the support of others? And please tell us about the issues you had to overcome and the final outcome.
Well, going back a long way to when I was a member of the high school teaching faculty, we developed a school within a school program for which was called Freshman Academy. And I was the team leader of the Freshman Academy team. And the purpose of Freshman Academy was to support students as they transitioned into the high school. We had assessed and seen a need that they were not coming with the skills that they needed for independent learning and to be able to really engage with high school level curriculum. And so we designed a program and we implemented it over the course of several years. And as part of it, we developed a schedule within itself. And so all of their classes up until their lunchtime were within this school, within the school system. That had an advisory program that was developed, again, that was targeting the study skills, but also the personal growth trajectory that they were going to need in order to be able to take responsibility for their own learning and move into the upper grade levels. So that is that was from a while back as a teacher. I have been, as the curriculum director the last couple of years, one of my responsibilities is the new teacher, new educator mentoring and induction program. And we have been working with that and altering some of the ways that it operated and ensuring that it is targeting the individual needs of the cohort that exists. And again, the programming component and the innovative piece of it is to really move the mentoring to a new level so that it's providing, that the mentors have training that is provided. We revamped the entire program to ensure that there is continuity, that there's a lead mentor in each building that's able to work with the mentors and help them through the process with a mentor trainer. And then with the new educators themselves, there's the focus of the program. We shifted a couple of years ago to having the underlying foundation of it be about self-reflective practice and how to build that in to what you do and how to have those habits laid down so that you're able to continually look at the work that you're doing and how it's serving the students and what it is that you can do to improve that and help you set those professional development goals in order to find the tools and resources that you need, all of having kind of like this supportive circle of folks around you that are there to help. If we hire somebody to come and work here, then we owe them an investment of our time and our resources to ensure that they are successful, because that is how we ensure that students are successful and that their needs are getting met. Okay, so those are two examples.
Can I follow up real quick? Dr. Robert, and the outcome of Freshman Academy, is that still successful? What were the successes of that very unique program?
It was very successful for the time that it was in existence. We had some changeover in administration. There was a kind of a turnover, and programming needs to have some structural support in order for it to continue on and exist, but it was very successful at the time. We were able to really move the academic skills of that group. We were able to target, so it's about three years that we were full on able to do all of the things that we needed to, and it really made a tremendous difference. important at that point, and that was evidenced by student scores and grades and attendance and all of those things, and that attendance is actually one of the big things. But statistically speaking, a student who struggles in ninth grade, that's the key determinant as to whether or not they're going to be able to complete it, be on the trajectory to complete, and whether they have the resources that they need. So I'd say that the program, when it was implemented, was extremely successful.
Thank you. Lori.
All right. So next question. How will you promote new and sustained, promote new leadership and sustain and support current leadership in consistently improving their schools and while you're maintaining accountability?
So sustainability is a really important part of any of the work that is done. There's a lot of great ideas that people have, and we've had a history of sometimes charging off in a certain direction, but it was personality driven, and we weren't able to sustain the change past a change in leadership. So the thing that is really essential to ensuring that we have sustainable programs is the strategic plan and the use of the strategic plan in order to guide the work that is being done and use it as a scale and a measure of programs and initiatives. So where do they fit into the strategic plan? And if they don't, then we need to either adjust the strategic plan or we need to set the program aside until it does align with the goals. But having something that is in place, that is long-term, that is laid out with the priority areas so that those things are being followed is the kind of both the foundation and kind of the wrapper that keeps everything together so that it can move through the process and create effort. Did that answer the question for you?
Dr. Crawford, SAU 34 is a multi-town school district of Hillsborough and Deering and includes the Washington School District and the town of Windsor. Please cite some specific examples of things you would do to promote and sustain effective collaborative efforts in a district like ours.
So it is important to always recognize and be able to celebrate the unique nature of each of the four towns that make up the SAU and how they work together to create the system that we have. One of the programs that we put in place, it is on hold right now due to the pandemic, but we're looking at being able to bring things back a little bit. But the when I first started working at Washington Elementary School, one of the things that I really wanted to support them in implementing was a way to develop the students to be able to develop connections with the students that were in Hillsborough Deering, because the entry into sixth grade is jarring to come from a very small community. And so from my time working at the high school, that's something that students from Washington would talk about a lot, is how jarring and unsettling their entry into sixth grade was. And it wasn't because anybody was doing anything particularly mean, or it was just so different. And there was this really large group of kids that had spent a long time together. And then there was this really tiny group of kids that had spent their whole lives together. And then they move in, and part of that process is that you learn to make new friends, but that means you're kind of growing apart from the folks that you were with. And it was, again, really bordering on traumatic for a certain number of students. And so we started developing a program where the fourth and fifth graders from Washington would be able to have kind of exploratory learning events, if you will, in conjunction with the fourth and fifth graders from Hillsborough Hearing, so that by the time you get to sixth grade, they would have met folks. So I think it was really successful. Those staff up at Washington really embraced it. We had some folks down here at HD that really embraced it. We had some super small classes at Washington that made me feel a real sense of urgency about it. So it wasn't, we had really tiny classes. So it was only one or two or three kids moving in together, moving down together. But being able to, so that was the Troca expeditions, there was like some experiential learning out there. But the best part, I really think, was the being able to have the Hillsborough Deering kids come up to Washington and spend the day at Camp Morgan on Washington Kids Turf, where they get to like be the tour guide and show them what to do and learn how to use the boats because the Troca people came over. But that kind of, the combining of efforts is really important on the student level. And I think that the more often that we can get the Hillsborough Deering kids to be able to experience some of the things up in Washington, as well as the reverse, is really important. And I also think the other place where this really fits in is with professional development. One of describing Washington Elementary School to people, the most wonderful, it's a beautiful spot, it's in this, up on a hill, and it's lovely, and it's isolated, and it's wonderful, and one of the most difficult things about it is that it's on a hill by itself, and it's really isolated. And the reason for that is it's really hard to be a practitioner of one, and to be the only kindergarten teacher, or the only anything teacher, and to do that all by yourself and to not have a team to collaborate with, and you end up kind of getting, I know rut isn't probably a nice way of putting it, but sometimes you miss out on innovation that's happening, and you don't have anybody to check your biases and your other tendencies that tend to crop up. And so one of the things that we've really made a concerted effort of over the last several years is to ensure that Washington Elementary staff is part of the professional learning that happens when we have full-time, full district PD days and groups, and they're part of grade level teams. And again, some of this has been a little bit on hold with the pandemic and the Zooming and those kinds of things. But that to ensure that nobody is on an island by themselves, and that we're able to make sure that everybody is able to collaborate and benefit from that communication.
Thank you.
Heidi?
How will you support educators in carrying out the goals of the strategic plan while also involving members of the community in the improvement of our schools and effectively communicate this to the stakeholders?
So the communication cycle is something that we've been working on really hard the last couple of years, and I think we've made some good strides in strengthening that, and there's still a lot of room for improvement. And looking forward to being able to have all of that together. But it is the community needs to know what is happening in the schools. There is so much innovative, exciting, wonderful stuff that is happening, even in the midst of a lot of restrictions and constrictions from things that are happening now. There is a lot of great stuff that happens, and the community needs to know about it. So there's a lot of strategies that we've put in place over the years. We've implemented the use of social media because it's a great way to get some of that out to folks. We have this is the second year that we've been able to do this program. We have an intern that works with the SAU, for an ELO, an extended learning opportunity, that's our communications intern. And so the first year, the student had a real interest in social media and took on some of those components and helped us out with that. And we were able to bolster up some of the things with the Twitter hashtags and make sure that they were going for each school. And she was really instrumental in helping with that. The intern that we have this year has a real interest in graphic design, and she's been working on helping develop some new posters and brochures around the strategic plan, and to be able to help that out, and also works on press releases with us to make sure that we have a constant kind of stream of those happening. But one of the things that we need to really come up with workable plans for is how do we bring the community in and make ourselves available to them. So we had just recently surveyed the community, open survey, and it's not closed yet, but it's open collecting information, but about the ESSER consultation, about how we're going to utilize the ESSER funds in both school districts. And but one of the questions that we asked, and you know, kind of like, how do you want us to continue to communicate things, and so that's sort of like asking people how they want us to communicate with them is an important component of it. We need to ensure that we're going to where people are at. So there's some interest in, you know, having forums, and we'll continue to do that and use the messages and other things. But I would love to have more opportunities for folks to come in and see how things are going. We're really excited about, we were so gung-ho for it at the beginning of this year, and we had to postpone it, but we're hoping in the spring to have a campus-wide open house here at Hillsborough Dairy, and to have that be the kind of event that the full community can participate in, and it's not just people who have kids in schools, but we want to be able to really show people all of the great things that we're doing.
Thank you. Paul.
SAU 34. Schools are required to raise test scores and improve achievement at all levels. What steps would you take during your first year as superintendent to assure that we meet required standards?
So, I'm going to continue some of the steps that we've been taking because it's outlined in the strategic plan. The most important component of this is making sure that our students have the foundational skills that they need. And so over the course of the last couple of years, we've made a concerted effort to ensure that our pre-K to 2 students are getting the foundational academic skills that they need and the work that is happening through the work bringing and ensuring that we have some real understanding of the scope and sequence of the standards and what needs to be taught at each grade level. And so that was the beginning part of that project, was just making sure that things were aligned. And then we've been bringing in, again, with the professional development that goes with it, some programs that really target those skills to ensure that that's happening. Students need to enter grade 3 reading on grade level. All students need to be able to read on grade level. And so you're going to learn to read, and then you're going to read to be able to learn things. And if you can't read, then it's much more difficult to pick things up. And so I spent many years working with high school students who are reading at a lower elementary school reading level. And it is a struggle that they don't need to take on, that is something that, so the target is the early literacy component, and I think we've made some really great strides with that. And so that is a very important piece of it. As far as test scores go, the test scores are going to show us that our students know and are able to do what they need to do to be on grade level when we have gotten our curriculum aligned and we have the resources that we need and that teachers have the ability to do the things that they need to in the classroom. and then the test scores come. One of the things that we don't want to do is focus on the test scores without fixing what's leading to the scores not being in the place that they need to be. We need to make sure that we're using the instructional strategies that are going to meet students where they are. We need to make sure that students who are not on grade level are getting the help and support that they need in order to be able to do that, and the tools that we're working with. So we've implemented a series of things over the past several years. One is the implementation of the iReady Diagnostic Suite, which is for both reading and math, and that is from kindergarten through mostly 11th grade. Students use that, and it's something that happens 3 times a year. One of the benefits of this over some of the other diagnostic tools that we've used in the past is that it provides individualized pathways for students and kind of like a recipe for these are the skills and things that they need, and it's a way to make sure that we are targeting each individual students and not kind of like, well, these are my struggling readers, so we're going to put them over here and hope that, you know, that this skill that I'm doing is the one that everybody needs and everybody's able to work on that. So we've used the iReady Diagnostic. Several years back, we had brought in a program called Foundations, which elementary school programs have silly names, and it's just part of how it works. But it helps with phonics, and that's and one of the things that we have seen and the scores show is that that is an area of strength for us because that program is being implemented and implemented consistently. So being able to do that and give people the training that they need, and then now we're moving into some reading and writing instruction that is more consistent as well. So those things, teachers need the tools that will work and the flexibility to implement those tools in the way that meets the needs of an individual student. So moving forward, so the big key is the early literacy component. Did I answer your whole question?
Right. Yes, thank you.
During challenging fiscal,
I'm sorry. Is it you, Erin?
Yep, that's okay.
Go ahead, Erin. Sorry, Dan. Don't fight.
Sorry.
Sorry. I wrote it down wrong.
So much. During challenging fiscal times, it is often necessary to make critical decisions about human and financial resources. What processes will or do you use when making these difficult decisions? Provide a few concrete examples of times when you employed creative strategies to stretch existing resources without eliminating prioritized initiatives with the school district.
So the first strategy, and the one that is the most important, is what is going to be in the best service of students. Always is how we need to look at those things. How to make difficult choices and look at that it's a team approach, as is everything that needs to be done. But at the end of the day, the top priority has to be what's in the best service of students. As far as creative approaches, as to, you know, it's weighing options and looking at how those things implement. And so I've often been made fun of, I guess, teased about the fact that I truly believe that a well-organized chart will solve all of the, whatever your problem is, you know, you just have to find the chart that works for it and to be able to do that. So but part of it is everything has an opportunity cost, and a little economic center, right? So there's a trade-off and an opportunity cost for each decision that you make. And so you go through the process and like, what is the opportunity cost of this decision? What am I giving up in order to have this thing happen? And how many students are going to be served by this? And looking at the, you know, is this going to overly impact a population of students that are already underserved. Like that is the whole the process that you go through, and you weigh all of the opportunity costs. There's lots of ways to get creative about how we work with things. Sometimes it's, you know, there's an expensive program that you put it on a rotation, and you know, so that we're going to make sure that all students have an opportunity to engage with this program, but maybe not every student every year. So that's something that can happen. There's also, you know, alternative funding sources. Like I said, we work with the grants, and you can squeeze a lot out of the grants. And especially, so we have our entitlement grants, the Title I funding, which is at the two elementary schools, Title II, which I've spoken about before, the professional development, and Title IV, and we have the RLAS grant, and we have the REAP grants, and, you know, right now we have ESSER, which is a, not forever, but considerable resource that we have available, and sometimes it's looking how to utilize those funds to get things up and running to make sure that they're, and it goes back to that sustainability piece. You know, there's a danger of putting positions into grants, but you can, instead of doing it that way, sometimes you can bring in the foundational resources that you need to get a program up and running. So for instance, we were able to bring the wood technology class to the middle and high school this past year, and which was very exciting to be able to have those back. But we were able to leverage some of what's called it's a rural schools grant, our RLAS funds, in order to do that. So that the upstart cost of a wood shop is really expensive. Sustaining it over time, so it is something that the teacher is working on, is having projects that can be sold in order to, you know, help sustain the cost of the program. So by using grant funds to do the initial outlay for the equipment that's needed, and then looking at, is it going to be a completely self-funded program? No, it's not going to be a completely self-funded program, but being creative in that way and trying to work those elements in, it would be an example of how to do that.
Okay. After working 20 plus years in a variety of positions in this district and being a member of various teams in SAU 34, how would you plan to transition to the superintendent of the district where you held these positions?
So I am qualified to be the superintendent of any school district. I am uniquely qualified to be the superintendent of SAU 34 because of my background in history, and because of the work that I was able to do in as the strategic plan came up and began. I have a unique perspective because I've held almost all of the positions when I sit and talk with people, that I know their lens that they're coming from. It was not in this district, but I have been a para and a tutor, and I did that, you know, and then, you know, coming in here, I've been a special educator, I've been a classroom teacher, I've been an administrator, and I've had those positions, and that gives me some insight into where people are coming from, and being able to relate with the concerns that they have, and being able to figure out how to fit those in to the overall plan. But the key to everything is having a strategic plan that clearly lays out a path to success. I truly believe that this SAU 34 as a whole is poised to really do tremendous things.
May I?
Yes.
Ask for a little bit more with that. As part of the varied positions that you've held, you have had peers in these positions. Could you tell the board how you would transition from peer to superintendent.
Okay. It is a path that I have traveled before to a certain extent. I became an administrator in the building that I have been a member of the teaching staff in for over a decade. And so there is a difference, and you do need to have the perspective that relationships shift and things change. And to go from being somebody's colleague and, you know, teaching in the classroom next door to them, to observing them and being part of their professional evaluation process is different. But I think it is something that I was able to do very successfully, you know, as when I moved from teaching in the classroom at the high school to being a high school administrator. And I moved from being a building-level administrator into the central office, and I was able to make that transition successfully as well. But part of it is being aware. Clear, concrete, open, and honest communication is always going to be the crux of how you deal with situations, and being just really upfront and honest with people. I'm not by nature a subtle person, and so being upfront with people about, you know, how things function and operate and how they change, but striving always for a culture that allows people the ability to speak their mind, even when they disagree, especially when they disagree. And to be honest, I would rather be in a room full of smart people that disagree with me than in a room full of people that are just nodding their heads along when I talk.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to share with the board?
I mean, I've mentioned the strategic plan a number of times at this point, but I truly think that this strategic plan lays out the three foundations of what it is that we need to be focused on. You know, that you have, I always talk about them in this order on purpose, that you start out with culture, because if you don't have the culture that supports what is going on, then you're not going to have that sustainable success that you're looking for, because that's where you just get, you know, everybody's complying with what you're... I am confident that I can get somebody to do what I want them to do because I ask them to do it. But to get somebody to believe that what I'm asking them to do is the thing that they need to do, and it is in their best interest and in the best interest of their students, is a different thing. And so having that culture that supports learning and is invested in students and in growth for staff as well is essential. So that comes first, and then you have the learning environment. I really like the way that we have it written in the strategic plan, that it is a visible reminder of the importance that we place on education and what it is that we put together for a learning environment, and that includes everything from the buildings that we sit in to the technology that we have available and the virtual tools that we use, you know, and then it's student success. And you know, we're entering the spring, God willing, soon, of my 23rd year here. And I am here, and I have been here as long as I had, and I've had all of those positions. I think I hold the record, actually, of the number of job titles in the district. I sort of think about that once. But the... I am here because this community as a whole, these towns, this community, these students, their families, this staff, is where my heart lies. And I know that we can do amazing things given a plan that keeps people on track and moving together, because for so long there has been so much effort put into pulling, you know, forward, but like weekly forward. And the strategic plan is what knits it all and pulls it together. And it's a 5-year plan. And we've got 3 years left of this 5-year plan. And then we're going to have another one. And it's going to build off of this. And it's going to continue the trajectory. And we're going to make sure that the voices of everybody in the community is included and heard, so that we are continuing to look at, we've got this portrait of a graduate that says that this is what a graduate of this school system needs and is going to be. And we're going to make sure that they have the things that they need in order to be that. They can do anything. I've watched them. They're amazing. And now their kids are in school.
Do you have any questions for the board?
What is it that you would like to see happen first? We have all of these things and ideas and plans and excitement, but what is it that the board members think is the key step to take forward?
Go ahead, Paul.
For me, it's test scores. Because I think it makes the school look good if they raise the students. If they have good test scores, they may get scholarships to colleges and so forth. And so I'd like to see that go first. Just my opinion.
Go ahead, Aaron.
For me, it's community. I think that we all are part of a community. I really like that idea that these kids are part of a community, their families are part of a community, our school is part of a community, to include Washington County Hillsboro. So continuing that community focus so that when these kids become adults, they are still part of that community and that they're engaged in that community and they're just part of it and becoming functioning and helpful members of society and not just being part, you know, to be part of it, actively part of it. So that is important to me from a school perspective. So bringing the community into us, but bringing the us to the community.
Chris, do you have something?
The first thing that comes to mind is, of course, having been on the strategic plan task force or the committee, those three pillars. But and those three pillars are the pillars are perfect, because culture and the environment. You know, having a strong culture, because you can't have student success without that, you know, positive culture. Just students feeling proud about walking in the building and feeling supportive when they're in the building, knowing who to turn to if they have struggles, any kind of struggle, whether even if it's non-academic, you know, whether it's peers or bullying, having those supports. And hopefully the culture is so positive that some of those issues are minor. And then the rest, I think, comes with that. I think that's kind of that intermediary for student success. Mm-hmm. But I do really like the strategic plan. The more I work over it, not just because I was part of it, but because we all were able to pull from it and pull together. So I think it starts with those culture and the learning environments.
I concur, actually, with Chris, having worked on the strategic plan as well. For me, it's very important that it move forward, that it continues, because that is what is going to take us where we need to be.
Yeah.
So, yes. Anyone else?
I was going to say, in today's world, I feel like a big important thing is the unity of the community, where there's a lot of divide in the larger community, and I think it's important. There's a way to bring everybody together on the same page and make everybody feel heard, I guess.
Okay.
I was just going to...
Yep, go ahead, honey.
Just coming out of, hopefully, coming out of this pandemic, we're seeing the endemic of the pandemic, first really figuring out how we're transitioning back to semblance of normalcy for both our faculty, which are burned out and overwhelmed, and our students that are figuring out who they are in this new normal. So I think that that is, again, test scores are great, I agree, accountability is key, but without the foundation of culture and the environment and laying that down, you can't build a house if you're focused on the roof. So putting that, I think, as essential, because you'll be moving into a role right when we're transitioning into new and really figuring out how to set the tone for that new year where we could hopefully be back to a normal environment. So that's a big priority, because then everything else starts to fall into place, I think, once we have the morale and the support for our teachers and staff and students.
Okay, you know how I operate. Those of you who have spoken, good. Now, you know I'm going to ask each one of you, because that's what I do. Okay. So, Jess, is there anything you'd like to say?
I did initially, but so much of it was said, I didn't want to sound like a broken record. But I think beyond just culture, the establishing a sense of pride in the students and the teachers that this is an incredible district that has so many amazing people and programs, and to see those not just to be sustained consistently, but to grow even more, that this is a school that really does something special and different for all of the students in a different way.
Perla?
I think everything was touched on that I was thinking about, the community, and doing everything we can in the culture to instill mutual respect, even when we have varying opinions, because, and having the community be involved with that, because this is a crucial place for the children to be exposed to that, if they're not being exposed to that in their homes.
Kenny?
I agree. I'm just, everybody's already said, okay. Pretty much I agree. I don't have anything more to add.
Okay. I agree. Yeah, anything I have has been touched on, I agree, absolutely. Okay.
Cindy?
I think things have been covered. You know, each element in the strategic plan is essential. And it is almost a perfect plan.
Okay, Lori?
No, I think it's been, I have a wish list as long as my arm, and I bet you do too. So I think we've covered what we can solve tonight.
And Dave?
I agree with Paul. To me, the education part is the most important of everything. Heidi was right in her thought process, as far as I'm concerned, that you don't, if you're going to build a house, you're going to put the roof on first. But to me, the education part is the foundation. So I think the education is much more important than a lot of other aspects, my personal opinion.
Okay. All right, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jen.
Public comment? I guess we're all set. All right. Okay. So now, I would like to have a motion to go into non-public for RSA 91-A:32.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Must so, one.
No.
I didn't turn. It's still recording until the roll call.
No air. So that's
funny. Wow. We did all say yes.